Welcome to 30 Minutes on 91.3 KXCI Tucson. I'm Amanda Schager. Today on 30 Minutes, we hear excerpts from a panel at the 2014 Festival of Books, curated by the Pima County Public Library's Nuestras Raices. The talk is entitled Raza Studies, the Public Option for Revolution.
Our first presentation this morning is Raza Studies, the Public Option for Revolution. The well-known and controversial Mexican-American Studies MAS program in Arizona's Tucson Unified School District set out to create an equitable and excellent educational experience for Latino students. Panelists Dr. Julio Camarota and Dr. Agustin Romero, who helped create the program, will explore this progressive, indeed revolutionary, educational movement. And now I'd like to introduce you to the moderator for this presentation, staff writer at the Tucson Weekly, Mari Herreras. Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here tonight. I want to thank Pima County Libraries, Nuestras Raices. This is always one of the best tents and experiences every year at the festival. It's nice to see some friendly faces here tonight too, today. But the main sponsor, which is the University of Arizona Press, which is the publisher of the book that Julio and Agi wrote, edited. I've always wanted to do this, but can we just start with a clap? Do you think would be
yeah,
normal thing to do?
Yeah. The way that we do the clap, it's the Chicano clap.
Unity Clap.
The original purpose was when farm workers in California were working, they were diverse people. They didn't speak the same language, but they wanted to unify and become connected together. So they would start a clap, they would start slowly, and then eventually pick up the pace until it finally ends. So we're gonna do all do the clap together.
Stand up.
Okay.
Agustin Romero is currently with the Tucson Unified School District. This is when I realize I'm getting old and I have to put on my beautiful glasses. I should know this by heart, however. He's currently the director of the Department of Culturally Responsible Pedagogy and Instruction and is co-founder of the Social Justice and Education Project that's affiliated with the University of Arizona. And Julio, who's sitting to his right, is an associate professor with the University of Arizona's Mexican American Studies Department, or Raza Studies Department, and is also a writer. This is not his first book. He is the author of Sueños Americanos, Barrio Youth Negotiating Social and Cultural Identities. Did I get that right? All right. This week we ran a Q&A online on our blog, The Range, question and answer with Julio and Agi about the book, and really about lots of things. I think I mentioned online that if you haven't been paying attention, which I hope all of you have, this has been an interesting last few years for both of these gentlemen, for a lot of people in our community. And I'm really glad that they're able to be here with us and talk about the book and talk about many things tonight. And I know Agi in particular has some things he'd like to start us off regarding just the community and teachers, and I'd like to let him have first go.
Thank you, Mari. I think it's important as we recognize and we reflect and as we move forward, I'd really like to give thanks to our current leadership in Tucson Unified School District. I think today we are in as good a place as ever with this leadership, with the leadership of Dr. Sanchez, Dr. Vega, Mr. Steve Holmes, and equally important, our governing board, from the support of Cam Wattis, Crystal Foster, and Alita Grijalva. I think we're in really good shape. And I want to give thanks to those people and their support. And at the same time, I think it's really critical that we recognize the teachers that were involved in this educational movement. Along with Julio and I and the teachers, I don't really have words to describe what we created. A word might be organic, a word might be authentic, a word might be compassionate, passionate. All of those words collectively, we created this incredibly beautiful thing. And it was a collective, as I said before, with all the teachers, Julio and myself, all of our supporters. We had a Mexican-American Studies Community Advisory Board, which Liz was a part of, and other people like Lorraine Lee, Richard Elias, Raul Aguirre, Ruben Reyes, Andrea Romero, people who really support what we've done, Lorraine Lee. And I got to really recognize all those folks, because it was really a unique time where all of these things came into place and we were able to create this incredible thing for our children. And I think it was really important that we recognize all of those people. At the same time, the last thing I'll do in terms of this perspective in this area is need to thank our contributors. Dr. Mary Carol Combs is here with us right now, as well as Dr. Nolan Cabrera. Thank them for contributing to this book. Thanking them for their support. And at the same time, thanking them for the contributions to this book, wherein hopefully we get to shed new light on truth.
One of the things that's really great about this book is that it kind of serves a dual purpose, and I talked about that online this week, is that it is, in a way, it's a guide. You know, if you were to talk about bringing this kind of program to life, but it's also a historical record of how these two gentlemen met, and those stars that align that Augie's talking about are very much a part of that story. And I wonder if you guys could both talk a little bit about that, because to me, I love that part of the book, the different perspectives that you and Julio talked about, how this started for you and this relationship.
Well, I came to Tucson about 12 years ago, and I was looking for an educational program where young people could participate and do original research. They could do original research in their own educational setting as well as in their community. And I went to a principal, Dr. Scarborough, right, at Cholla High School. I met him and I was talking to him and telling him my ideas. I was telling him, yes, I'd like to engage young people researching their school, researching real critical issues such as racism, sexism, and then have them actually present their results to key stakeholders, such as teachers and principals and public officials. So I told him this idea, and then he said, you gotta meet someone. He's a teacher of our Mexican-American Studies program. You gotta meet him. I think you two will get along. So I came to his class, and then, here, you take it over after that.
Julio came to my class, he was really surprised, because in my classroom we had this book called Critical Race Theory, The Cutting Edge, which is a book that's used in a lot of law schools, Bolt Hall, University of Colorado, Harvard Law. And he's like, what are you using there? And I said, well, this is critical race theory, and I'm using critical race theory in connection with history and government. And he said, wow. And he said, the kids really looked like they were really locked on, they were really engaged. And I said, the kids eat this stuff up. And he said, can we have a conversation? Can we get together? And I'm like, oh, heck yeah, of course. After that, we met over here. It's no longer there anymore, but Cafe Paricio, right down near the main gate. And we met there and we had a conversation, and we talked about all these different theorists that we love so dearly: Antonio Darder, Christine Slater, Pedro Noguera, Paulo Freire, Gramsci. You know, we're like, we're talking the same language. And it's like, man, I haven't met anybody like this before. And so we're sitting there and we're talking about, we can do this, and we can do that, and we can do this, we can do that. And we're like, okay, cool. And then a few weeks later, not more than maybe a week to 10 days later, is when Dr. Montaño comes to my classroom and recruits me to create this thing called, what we now call the Mexican American Studies Program. The department was already in existence, but there was no programmatic theoretical framework. And so after that, we sat down together and we created the Social Justice Education Project, which then thereafter, we created the Critical and Compassionate Intellectualism Model with our students, which hopefully we'll talk about in a little bit.
Sounds good. Sounds good.
He was really receptive to the idea of having youth conduct their own original research. And then he said, you know, I'm about to become the director of Mexican American Studies. If we do this, we can start Achoya High School. There was a teacher there, Lorenzo Lopez, who was actually a mentee of Augie's, and he said we can do it in this classroom. So we started in the, what do you call those things? Those portables. We started in a portable on the outskirts of the school, which was actually kind of good because we're off the margins. Out of the radar, out of the range of the radar. So we could do this sort of revolutionary work with students without anyone sort of really paying attention. Plus we had the support of some key people. Becky Montaño and Adelita Grijalva later on would come up and support us as well.
You know, if you understand sort of educational leadership and how you place things in proximity in your school, you place all the good stuff up front. And if you know Choya High School, where the entrance is, man, we were way past the football fields. We were nowhere near close to the front. And the year before, Julio and I actually got together, and where Lorenzo Lopez was I was his cooperating teacher. That year, we weren't even above ground. We were in this place called the Albies, which is the library basement, which used to be a bomb shelter back in the day. And it was funny because we were doing the things that we do, and one of my students comes to me and says, "Hey, Romero, you know what? You got to be underground to teach this stuff."
I love stories like that. So, Julio, one of the things that I think that you in particular, though, as the program took off and the benefit for you, I think, that I have seen as an observer is that you've been able to see a generation of kids go through the program and go through from junior high school and then into college and then see them make incredible lives for themselves. Do you want to talk a little bit about
that? Sure, absolutely. When we first started back in the portables, the students that we were that we got to help and to educate were students that were considered, with the lack of a better word, at risk, meaning they were about to drop out. Many of them were at the age of being seniors, but they only had credits for being a freshman.
Can I connect to that?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, the demographic of that student population, 17 students, each and every one of them dropped out at least one time, one as many as five times. The average number of credits after their sophomore year, instead of being 12 or 14 credits, the average number of credits for that 17 kid was five. And the average GPA, instead of being a nice 3.0 or even a pretty decent 2.0, was a 1.2 GPA. That was the first group of kids that we started working with.
Yes. So they were placed in this program called the Peer Program, which was a program that would provide them with the credits that they needed to graduate. In many cases, they were so far behind, they would, for instance, they would take English class three times in a row. So they would have the same English curriculum three times in a row to make sure that they would get it. So they would have first period be the English class, second period would be English class, third period would be English class. What do you think their response was to this? I can't hear you.
Bored.
You think they went to this class? No. No, they didn't go to this class. So they went to our class, mainly because we did things so drastically different. We challenged them. We didn't do the repetition. We gave them the high-level curriculum, which was for graduate students, but we challenged them with this curriculum. And they responded to this. And they responded so well that, as I said, when they first came to the classroom, they were sort of leery. They've heard all these different reforms before. They came through all these different processes where people say, oh, we can help you, But so they didn't really trust us in the beginning. But eventually they started to realize that we believed in them and we loved them. We loved them. We believed in them and we loved them.
We'll continue on 30 Minutes with Drs. Julio Camarota and Agustin Romero, moderated by Tucson Weekly writer Mari Herreras at the 2014 Festival of Books in a panel entitled Raza Studies, the Public Option for Revolution.
So, I'm trying to get back. I know.
So what I talked about was that seeing these generations of kids, because I know some of them myself, and that, you know, so I have seen these amazing kids, you know, grow through the program, and I know there are a few in particular that are always on your mind.
Right. So one of the students in this original class, her name is Kim Dominguez, who had dropped out because she had to take care of her brothers and sisters, but then came back to our class. She eventually graduated, and then she is currently a student here at the U of A, finishing her BA, and she's gonna go into our PhD program in Mexican American Studies. So these were students that education was the farthest thing from their mind, but because we believed in them, we challenged them. We said that you can become intellectuals. That they rose to the occasion But there, we have many other stories. Why don't you talk about Yarko?
Oh, yeah. I had the blessing of 2 weeks ago, yesterday, one of our former students who really got caught in this sort of thing that we see now with some of our border issues, where his parents, we're born on the other side. Parents came here, and he had brothers and sisters, older brothers and sisters that were born here, were U.S. citizens. And one of those times where his parents went back, he was born in Mexico, and then his parents come back again, and he has younger brothers and sisters who are American citizens. So he has about three or four older brothers and sisters that are American citizens and two or three younger, but he's like the middle child that was the only one in the family that wasn't a U.S. citizen. Well, he went through the long process that it goes through, and I had the blessing of being there with him 2 weeks ago yesterday, where now he received his U.S. citizenship. So, and let me go back and just not Yarko, but you know, one of the things that those 17 students and many students thereafter talked about and their parents talked to us with was the idea that what the students told us was we were on a path, and it wasn't a good path. What we talk about in this program is that, well, we're about education, of course, but recognizing the idea that we're about saving lives. Because what we do know that if the kids don't get through high school, they meet one or two different types of death. The literal death where they die in our streets, or the metaphorical death where they end up in prison. And we're just so blessed that that original group of 17 kids, none are dead and none are in prison, and they're all contributing citizens to this community. All have graduated. Some have graduated from college, but they're all in our community.
So none of them try to take over the United States?
Not yet.
All right, that's good to know.
I wish they would.
No, they are amazing. I mean, there are amazing kids here in this community from this program that are forces to be reckoned with, that are definitely activists and have gone in that direction. And then there are kids from this community that just said, you know, wow, I see the benefit of education more than ever. And they went on to get nursing degrees. They went on to get, you know,
they're doctors.
They're doctors or lawyers. Right. Urban planners, for sure. So or professors in Mexican American studies, Chicano studies. I mean, it was a wide range of students that came out of the program.
Yeah. Subsequent cohorts. There were students, one I'm still very close with, Luis Valdez, who comes from the South Side, second generation. His parents come from Mexico. He's now in the public health program here, pursuing his PhD. And then we have Gracia Ramirez, who's in our nursing program. We have Michelle Rascon, who's at ASU, working on a justice degree. So we have many students who subsequently, after this first cohort, that still have you know, internalize this idea that education is for them and education is something. We gave them a different meaning of education. It wasn't, education wasn't just for personal gain or personal promotion. Education was something that they could do to help their communities out. So that's why you have them in these programs such as public health, and you have them there in programs like nursing or a justice program. It's because they want to contribute. They understand that education is about something that they can learn and gain the credentials and use those credentials to do something about it, to make some change.
You know, one of the things that obviously became part of the, you know, when the state decided there was, you know, something horribly wrong with these classes was a perspective where they would take pedagogy terms and pedagogical terms and make them into something that was horrible. But one of the things you talk about a lot in this book is CCI, and I'm using the acronym, but can you talk a little bit about that and what that is and why that's such an important part of the program or the curriculum?
CCI is Critically Compassionate Intellectualism, and it's the theoretical framework that we used in the Social Justice Education Project, and it became the theoretical framework through which we create the programming within the Mexican American Studies Department. Now, the unique thing about CCI is that, for all intents and purposes, we really didn't create it. Remember that group of 17 kids that some people might call at risk or maybe not your bright students? Well, it was those 17 students who created this model. You know, what happened was we started working with these students, and I contextualized who they were, started working with them in August. I walked in the classroom one day in May, and all 17 kids are still there. And I asked one question, why are you still here? And what they said to us was, what you teach us, which became curriculum. And that what we taught them, as Julie was talking about, we taught them and we offered a curriculum that was about them, was culturally, socially, historically relevant to them, who they were. Their lives became the curricular artifacts. They studied themselves for all intents and purposes. And at the same time, up until 2006, the state of Arizona had what was called honor standards. And then regardless of what our naysayers say, we incorporated 100% of those honor standards in the curriculum. Our curriculum was and always will be highly rigorous, highly intellectually demanding, cognitively demanding. The students appreciated that. The idea that we didn't dummy down the curriculum, we elevated the expectation, we elevated the curriculum because we knew that each one of those children were intellectuals. We recognized the idea that each and every one of them had an affinity towards education. They didn't like schooling. They didn't like the way they were schooled, but they're learners, and they want to be learners. The next piece that we used is the pedagogical piece, but they didn't say pedagogy. They said how we taught them, how we went about teaching them. And that's where we were heavy in our Freirean approach. The pedagogy of the oppressed became our educational Bible. And we used those techniques, those understandings that Paulo helps us understand with our students, and they ate it up. They appreciated that. The next thing, the most important thing, is, and if we ever get a chance to recreate the model, this thing I'm going to talk about will be the foundation. And it's what the student said was different was how we treated them and their parents. And the words they used, you treat us with respect. You understand us. You appreciate us. And probably the most powerful thing that we could offer them was the L word. We love them. They recognized the idea that we love them. We took those understandings, and through those understandings and those questions, that's when we became the students and they became the teachers. We were students in this thing. Our students were teaching us how to educate. They were teaching us what was relevant to them, what was meaningful to them, what motivated them. And as good listeners, we sat down and we took note. And we put those things into practice. And they became part of our practice. We reflected upon them. We acted upon them. We reflected upon them and acted upon them with them collectively.
Augie, when talk about like that, how you did that. Like you talk about the you know, one of the things that I always heard about, the kids talk about and teachers, were the encuentros and how meaningful these encuentros were, that they organized with the parents and the students. They would invite the whole family together to school, back to school, to talk a little bit about those.
Yes, we engaged young people in conducting research and researching on their own lives, their own experiences, their own difficulties, challenges in life. So they would conduct research on their lives. Then we would set up these encuentros, which were meetings with parents in which they would present their research to their parents. When we first started, we started in the cafeteria at Choya High School. And we first started with the 17 students. So it was a small gathering. And immediately, once the students started to report on their lives and their experiences and their educational experiences, the parents started to go, wait a minute, that was my experience, right? I was placed in the auto shop class instead of put into advanced placement classes. You know, I was put into the home economics class. I was put into shop class, right, instead of put into the normal mainstream academic classes. And all the parents are going, wait a minute, this is my experience too. So the students then and the parents had this dialogue, and they dialogued, giving a sort of a historical account to what the students were experiencing. So in many ways, one incredible example of the encuentros was one student was reporting on the different differences between schools, the different in terms of resources between schools. So Choya High School didn't have as much resources as schools on the north side. So one parent said, wait a minute, you know, I'm a construction worker and we do construction work for the public schools. And I'm noticing that all the resources that are put into schools are put into schools on the north sides in terms of construction with the schools. So the parents started to realize the inequalities that existed in the system as well. Then eventually, once we started to have these dialogues with parents, it spread. It spread. We would then hold, once we moved to different schools, we would then hold the encuentros at TUSD central office. And there would be standing room only. The parents would have to, we would have not enough room to capacity to hold all the parents. So the parents would have to come in shifts. Yep. To see their students present. So it was quite incredible.
I'm going to add a little bit. Remember, before we do that, though, I want to acknowledge Alzita. Alzita Duncan is back there. Alzita Duncan is one of our former teachers. Alzita, thank you. And I want to also recognize Jessica Mejia, who is one of our current teachers. And Mr. Sal Gabardon, who is now the new director of Culturally Responsive Pedagogy and Instruction.
You've been listening to Drs. Julio Camarota and Augustine Romero, moderated by Tucson Weekly writer Mari Herreras at the 2014 Festival of Books, and a panel entitled Raza Studies, the Public Option for Revolution. This has been part one of a two-part series held at the Pima County Public Library's Nuestras Raíces Pavilion.